you're listening to Radio Reverb. I'm Natasha Steele, and a big welcome to the Brighton Business Show, broadcasting monthly from Brighton's open market. Coming up in the next hour, the latest news from Brighton and Hove's business community, interviews with those in the know, and localist schemes and events to support your next move. In Going Up, entrepreneurs from two very different food and drink businesses pitch for what they need to move to the next level. We're going in deep today on Brexit. What does leaving the European Union mean for businesses in this city? What should you be looking out for? And can you Brexit-proof your business? And how do African art and martial arts go together? You're listening to the Brighton Business Show on 97.2 FM, on digital, online at radioreverb.com and on podcast downloadable from Mixcloud and Audioboom. First, the local business news from around Brighton and Sussex. Here's some good news if you want to grow your business. Entrepreneurial Spark has launched four programmes to help you reach your potential, and you've got until the 9th of October to apply. Each programme is fully funded and tailored to businesses at a particular stage of development. So go to the website, entrepreneurial-spark.com, to work out which one would work best for you. As well as access to tip-top legal, financial and technology advice, your team can use the hub in the centre of Brighton, which comes with meeting space, desks, Wi-Fi and, most importantly, coffee. It's hard to see a reason not to give it a go, given that the scheme is completely free. So get on it. Here's a thing. Did you know you can save your business money simply by switching your water supplier? Not a lot of people know this, but if you're a business owner using more than 5 million litres of water a year, you can now change the company you buy it from. The new water market opened in April, and so far 36,000 businesses have made the switch, but many more could benefit, and lots haven't even heard about it. If you want to find out how much money you could save, why not run a comparison survey to find more competitive prices? It's exciting to hear that Brighton's digital economy is hitting big and now matches its tourism sector. That's what's revealed by research mapping the size and vibrancy of the digital industry in different cities. The study counted the number of tech events and business startup rates. Brighton ranked fourth despite being smaller than its competitors. The index was compiled by the Open Data Institute and Digital Catapult. If you'd like to get face-to-face with some of the city's leading digital companies, there's a chance to do so during Brighton Digital Festival. For 5 days this October, from 2nd to the 6th, companies across the city will be opening their doors to reveal what they do and how they do it. Open Studios Talent Week includes talks, workshops, seminars, barbecues, and even games tournaments. It's a unique opportunity to connect with some fantastic local digital businesses. Find out who's taking part and what's going on at the Wired Sussex website. Visit wiredsussex.com to register, and just so you know, spaces are limited. Do you know what you don't know about your own business? I don't know, but if you want to know, go to the Brighton Summit and they'll help you find out. We've all got something to learn about business. This year's event from Brighton and Hove Chamber of Commerce is all about embracing the unknown. The Brighton Summit is the biggest business conference in the city, and it takes place on the 13th of October at the Clarendon Centre on New England Street. You can book by visiting businessinbrighton.org.uk. Has your business won a contract, secured funding, or launched a new product? If so, we'd love to hear from you. Tweet or Facebook at Business Reverb, or email natasha.steele@icloud.com to get in touch with the show. We're going in deep on Brexit later, but after this track, I'm talking to Jax Golding from the Jaxmar Gallery and Kenny Moyston from Victory Fights about an unusual partnership. Here's A Tribe Called Quest. That was Can I Kick It from A Tribe Called Quest. Have you ever thought how African arts and martial arts might go together? My first guests on a very busy show are Jax Golding from the Jaxmar Gallery in Rottingdean and Kenny Moisten from Victory Fights. Welcome to the Reverb Studio, both of you.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Jax, your gallery specialises in African art and handcrafted jewellery, and I'm intrigued by your business and with the reason you got in touch with the business show. Can you tell us a little about your background and why you decided to open an African art gallery in Rottingdean?
Okay, I've always been an art collector, but my actual career background was that of an investigative journalist.
Okay.
And I've decided when relocating back to England that I wanted to give an African flavour, especially to the little historical quaint village of Rottingdean. And ironically, I opened up my gallery at the time that the country had voted Brexit, which was quite telling. And the gallery has been around for a year now and celebrates African art and steers away from the depictions of Africa as, you know, the kid running around with a big belly. It just gives an indication of really the flavours of Africa.
And how has the gallery been received in Rottingdean and beyond?
You know what? This is the beauty of Brighton and Hove. Brightonians are very welcoming. It's a diverse, eclectic group of people. And really, it's been welcomed and has lots of people coming in asking about it. Because I see the gallery as a way to educate people as well.
Really interesting. Can you tell a bit more about some of the artists that you feature?
Absolutely. I have lots of contemporary South African artists and artisans off the street. And while we try to give back is through a philanthropical operation in South Africa where we try and educate the families of the artists. And we also have an alliance with a Rwandan operation where they're building a school in war-torn Rwanda, so we sell arts and crafts in our gallery as well.
So you're bringing art from Rwanda and from South African communities.
And we will be bringing shortly from the Congo as well.
So you sort of see this as a whole exercise in terms of education, in terms of art, in terms of philanthropy. There's a very broad scope in the way you approach business.
My idea with the art gallery is I don't want people to be intimidated by art galleries, as often people are, either by the price of the goods or walking into it or not wanting to ask questions. So I have an unusual take on a gallery is that I want you to be comfortable and I want someone to be able to afford anything when they come in there. If they can't afford the painting, then they can walk out with a piece of jewellery that is handmade.
So everything in the gallery is handcrafted
Absolutely.
Or hand-produced?
Handcrafted, ethically produced, and we feed back a portion of the profits into our philanthropical operation, which is called the Wheatfield Estate Foundation.
And do you have, are you also involved in philanthropic enterprises in the city? Does it sort of link up with
Yes, we absolutely do. I mean, the Jaxmar Gallery has done a lot for the trying to always have a charitable angle. So we've done a 24-hour painting session for the martlets. Recently, we got involved. I sit on the trustees of the Saltine Community Charity, and we had inner-city kids under the project of CHOMP because hunger is a real issue for families in Brighton. Mm. And so we had spent a day at the seaside. So, you know, in every
you
small way.
You get involved in, here and in Africa.
Absolutely, because I think I believe in the African mantra of Ubuntu. It means I am because we are. We have to help each other out.
Now, you've taken the decision to partner Victory Fights for a mixed martial arts and K1 kickboxing tournament.
Right.
Kenny Moisten's here from Victory Fights. Can you tell us what mixed martial arts and K1 are compared with other kinds of fighting for people that aren't aware?
Okay, so mixed martial arts is a mixture of all different martial arts. There's a lot less rules than some other fighting styles. So you can strike, you can grapple, you know, just like some of the sports that are in the Olympics. You can box, you can kick like the Taekwondo guys. You can also wrestle and take people down like the judos and the Olympic wrestlers. And then when it hits the ground, you can submit each other and carry on striking. So, yeah, it's a more sort of a realistic fighting style, you know, the ultimate fighting style.
And how did you get involved in fighting, Jax? How did you two come together?
Oh, goodness gracious. I am a newbie. I'm a mum of four, And I wanted my teenage son, he was really interested in boxing, and I was recommended the Kenshiro MMA gym. And then I myself got involved by being a one-to-one sessions with Lily May, who is Kenny's fiance and is been with him, operating the gym. And for me, it was bizarre. It was an addiction to get involved in training in this way, which is very bizarre coming from a mother of four. So my entire family is now involved, from my 16-year-old son, myself, my husband, my younger son. It is very therapeutic, but it also educates one that this combat sports is not brawling. It is a discipline. Mm. And that is why I have a passion for it, because it's like my artist. There's a lot of passion put into it, a lot of discipline. And it's not no rules. There are rules.
Mm. So the unusual thing that's happened is that you brought together African art and mixed martial arts together for an event that's taking place in October. Can you tell us more about that, please?
So, yeah, the event we've got in October, the main event is a tournament, which is actually what Jax is sponsoring. It's a K1 kickboxing tournament. So K1 kickboxing, you have the American-style kickboxing, which is, there's a lot of rules to it. There's a lot of, you can't do this, you're not allowed to do this, you're not allowed to block in a certain ways, you're not allowed to take people to the ground, etc., etc. You're not allowed to kick in certain areas. So the K1 style is more open. It's not as open as Muay Thai. You're not allowed to elbow, but you're still allowed to use your knees. You can either body and the head, and you can use low kicks as well as mid-range kicks and high kicks. So we've got a heavyweight tournament, a four-man tournament in K1, and the guys we've got are just absolutely humongous. They're talking, every one of them is way over 100 kilos.
Wow.
120, in fact, three of them, I think, are over 120. One of them is about 105. He's a sort of the smaller athletic guy, but yeah, we're talking about big guys that are going to be coming down to show their stuff. So we have a like preliminary fight, and then whoever wins will go on to face each other in the final, in the main event at the end of the night, and we'll have be crowned with a belt.
So how many fights will take place?
About 12 to 15 fights. But in the tournament will be three fights.
Mm-hmm.
So we'll have the first two will face each other early on in the night, and then they get a chance to recover, and then the winners will face each other for the final.
So a really exciting night for anyone that's into that scene. Yeah. Absolutely. So Jax, some would say it's quite a leap to match any gallery, let alone one specialising in African art with fighting. Why does this work for you in terms of the sponsorship?
Well, for Kenny, MMA stands for mixed martial arts. For me, it stands for mixed media art. So I think both are artists in their own right. For me, it's important to, like in my gallery, I educate people on African art. I believe that it's important to educate people on the type of sport that combat sport is, K1 and MMA, because often even, and I'm to blame, I thought, you know, cage fighting was simply brawling, but it's not. It's actually a mastery way of playing chess, where people have to be both athletic and intelligent to be able to outmaneuver each other. And that intrigues me, and you know, I feel confident sponsoring and be a key sponsor because I believe in it. And you know, my 6-year-old son is coached by Kenny, my 16-year-old also, my husband. It is a family activity, and I think Brightonians need to be educated on that, just like they need to be educated on Africa.
So should other businesses be getting more creative with the way they approach sponsorship, and should they be taking more proactive roles in terms of philanthropic enterprises in the city?
Natasha, for me, it's if you believe in something, you got to take the risk. And although it seems an unlikely pairing, and it may seem that I'm sticking my neck out, you know, supporting an fight tournament, I say, why not? I believe in the people that operate the tournament. I see the benefits to my own family. And again, the African saying Ubuntu, I am because we are, you know, this is also a business operation. I'm a business. And it seems that it would be good to educate people in this unique setting as well.
Yeah. So that's Absolutely fascinating. Jackson Kenny, thanks ever so much for coming in. Jax Golding from the Jaxmar Gallery and Kenny Moyston from Victory Fights. There you have it, something for everyone. The Fight Night takes place on October 14th at Brighton Racecourse. Find out more at victoryfights.co.uk. And if you want to bring a little African colour and warmth to your home, office or wardrobe, no need to go far. Take a trip to the Jaxmar Gallery in Rotting Dean. Jax and Kenny, it's been fantastic having you on the show. Best of luck with the gallery and with the Fight Night.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Help support us by making a donation. We're a non-profit organisation run entirely by volunteers. No matter how big or small the amount, your help is essential to keep us on air and independent. Donate now. Click the yellow donate button at radioreverb.com.
What does leaving the European Union mean for businesses here in Brighton and Hove? Are you experiencing Brexit anxiety or Brangst? Or are you exhilarated by the prospect of cutting loose from the EU? Either way, how can you prepare for these tumultuous times? Then we've got Going Up. Two business owners pitch to you, our Reverb listeners. Will they inspire you to help them get to the next level? All will be revealed. But first, Alabama Shakes.
You gotta hold on.
Let me know which tunes get you motivated, carry you through the highs, or help you through the rocky patches of business life. Tweet at Business Reverb and we'll try to include them on the show. I'd like to welcome recruitment guru Claire Griffin and Simon Nicholson from Handelsbanken to the show. Hello and thank you for joining us. Simon, you manage the Brighton and Hove branch of Handelsbanken, which is one of Sweden's biggest banks. And prior to getting into banking, you had your own retail supply chain business. Can you tell me a little about the bank and the kind of clients you serve?
Yeah, sure. So I actually run the Hove branch. We have a separate branch in Brighton. And we've also got branches in Haywardsheath and Eastbourne. And we've got 207 branches across the UK. It's a very old bank. It's a Swedish bank. But we basically face off to market with a local presence. So we regard ourselves as a local bank. And the best way to describe it really is if you think of a traditional bank, but with all the modern technology you'd expect a modern bank to have. So we are like the traditional bank managers where you can actually come and see us and talk to us and we get to make local decisions. And that's really how we approach everything.
That's really interesting. Now, I spoke to a psychotherapist recently who said that lots of their business owner clients are presenting with anxiety about Brexit. I don't know about Brexit anxiety, but I think a lot of us are already getting Brexit fatigue. But what issues are businesses in Brighton and Hove already facing, and are we seeing the effects yet?
So I think we were talking about this a minute ago. I think it's not so much Brexit per se. It's uncertainty. Mm-hmm. So no, the thing about the Brexit debate really is no one really knows what's going to happen. So it just creates uncertainty. And for businesses, the worst thing you can have is uncertainty.
Absolutely.
The only sort of real obvious reaction there's been so far is movements in the pound, which have been quite considerable. And obviously that's given some people some challenges, which we talk about quite a lot. Mm-hmm. But the biggest one is trying to work out what's going to happen.
So what kind of businesses would you say are most exposed to the impact of Brexit?
Well, I think everyone is. But if you've got a business where you're importing goods, and you may not realise that you're importing goods, in fact, but if you are, then prices have moved for you already. Mm. And you might be buying goods locally which have been imported, so even though you're not physically importing yourself, the goods you're buying from your local supplier might be going up in price. So there's some really obvious changes that are already being felt. On the other side of that coin is if you're exporting, it's happy days because your goods have become effectively cheaper. So that's a real concern for a lot of people.
So there is some light on the horizon for some kinds of businesses. It's not all doom and gloom, is it? Claire, you've worked in recruitment for 25 years, is that right?
Yeah.
And you've been running your own business for 7. Can you tell me a bit more about the kind of companies you work with?
Yeah, I work with, and sometimes for, digital and technology businesses. Mm-hmm. Specifically, digital marketing and database marketing is really my kind of area of expertise. So, yeah, digital tech.
Basically. So a fast-growing area, especially in this city.
Very much so.
And are your clients feeling the Brexit blues in terms of attracting skills and talent? Have you seen any changes?
I don't think we're seeing too many changes yet, because there has been a decline, I understand, in the kind of new applications coming through from EU nationals for digital tech jobs in this country. Mm-hmm. But we still enjoy being European market leaders in digital tech. Mm-hmm. There was a report that came out earlier this year from the Tech Nation, which says that in the UK there are 1.64 million digital tech jobs.
Wow.
At the moment, and that the digital technology sector is creating jobs twice as fast as the non-digital sector. We're attracting talent, we're attracting investment, which in turn attracts talent. Mm-hmm. I would echo what you said, which is that basically what's causing the problem at the moment is the uncertainty.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, it's the not knowing exactly what is going to happen. Mm-hmm. You know, will talent be able to work here easily? Mm-hmm. Will there be an opportunity to allow people to get visas quickly and easily to work in digital tech?
Yes.
Not just in digital tech, actually, but, you know, from the EU sector across the board.
In any jobs.
And at the moment, nobody knows what's going to happen because the negotiations haven't come to an end. And we're not really going to know what's going to happen, it would seem, until, you know, we sort of move towards 2019.
Absolutely. So we've got uncertainty, but there must be guidance you can give businesses about how to manage uncertainty, whatever the nature of the uncertainty, whether it's Brexit or anything else. What would you say they need to be doing to keep hold of their talent, to attract new talent?
I think what they, yeah, and I mean, I think that's also very true. And actually, you know, the digital sector is actually well placed to be able to problem solve quickly and agilely, because that's what it does. Mm. You know, it's great at solving problems quickly and thinking creatively and collaboratively once it knows exactly what it's facing. The things it can be doing now are really the kind of best practice, talent practice for any industry that has a skill shortage, which digital already does. There is already a skill shortage. So how can they put in place best practice that's going to insulate them against that situation, potentially getting even temporarily worse, even if eventually it sorts itself out? So I would say that it's about building your employer branding. It's about making your company a place that people want to work at, and making sure that you retain your talent as well as attract
and
your
how
talent.
How can you do that? How can a business make their business attractive? What are potential employees looking for?
They're looking for a culture that they feel at home at. Mm-hmm. So they're looking for very often flexibility of work hours or work location. They're looking for diversity and inclusiveness. You know, do they feel that this is somewhere that they can thrive? You know, how diverse is your workforce in terms of not just nationality, but gender, age, for example? How can you build a culture which respects and values its employees? Mm-hmm. You know, people spend a lot of time at work in the digital industry. And I think there is a growing recognition that employers do have a responsibility for the wellness, if you like, and the happiness of their employees, because they spend such a lot of time at work. And the payback on that, of course, is that the happier and more engaged and psychologically and physically well your employees are, the better your company gets.
Absolutely.
So it's a perfect circle. And in terms of attracting talent, talent will come to that type of environment. It's also about the type of digital projects, and campaigns that you're working on. Mm-hmm. You know, sort of, for example, you know, developers want to be working on cutting edge coding projects.
So the
same kind of things that attract your clients will attract your employees.
Yes.
The difference is that companies can be very new business and client-facing orientated and forget to translate the message about all of this to potential recruits.
Sure.
You know, it can be a communicate, just a, you know, you may be doing all this good stuff, but just not communicating adequately into the potential talent marketplace.
Yeah.
So that needs to be looked at often as well.
Simon, but moving on from the staffing and recruitment side again, how might a small business be affected by Brexit, by the uncertainty?
By all of the uncertainty. Well, we talked briefly about foreign currency exchange rates, and my whole view really for these sort of uncertain times, and businesses are actually quite used to uncertain times because we've had a few recently, is you have to look at ways to actually put certainty into your business. So one of the things you can do, for example, right now, if you're an exporter, you should be looking at fixing your exchange rate. Now, you won't be able to predict it exactly, but you'll know roughly how many euros a year, for example, you might buy. Now would be a really good time to fix that rate, because then you know what you're actually paying
so
for.
So you go and see the bank manager.
Yeah, go and talk to your bank manager.
Explain the situation, explain that you'd like to mitigate for fluctuations that are likely to come. And you can come to an agreement for a period of a year.
Normally what you would do is look at, say, a period of a year and go, I would normally buy however many thousand euros it might be, and you would agree a rate on that. It's going to be slightly higher than today's rate, but at least then you know what the rate is. And conversely, you can do that on the other side if you're importing goods. One of the interesting things, I think, is we meet and talk to quite a lot of small businesses, and they're amazing companies, and they do a fabulous job at negotiating a really good price for the goods they purchase, and they then do a tremendous job, particularly in the UK, on marketing those goods and selling them, and they completely miss, often, the little bit in the middle, which is that the currency can move.
That could make such a difference to their bottom line.
Correct. And recently it moved by 15%. So if you're a small business, 15% is a lot.
And I think it's more than a tariff might come in, I think you've pointed out before.
Yeah, some of the tariffs that we're talking about are 9 or 10%. So the foreign currency exchange rate is bigger than that.
It could hit you much harder.
So you can do an absolutely brilliant job of running your business and signing contracts and then get caught out by that. So why leave that to chance? Why not have a look at that? And it won't be the best rate, but you know what it is.
So you've built in some certainty in these uncertain times by mitigating in that way. That's really interesting. Could you give us an example of a business and how it might be affected, picking something at random in terms of their supply chain, in terms of their export markets? How might it play out for somebody?
I think last time we talked about it, I talked about mugs, didn't I? I don't know why I picked mugs, but we talked about it was a hypothetical scenario,
exactly.
Really. So let's imagine you import your mugs from Germany, and you're really pleased with the deal you've done with the German company, and you've got these lovely mugs, and you're selling them in the UK. But if the price of buying those mugs goes up by 15%, then you have two options, really. One is you absorb it. I'm not sure how long you could absorb that if you're a small business. Or you pass it on to your customers. Or you do a combination of the two. But either way, your customers are impacted and your business is impacted. So it's quite a serious impact.
That's right. And Claire, what kind of help should companies be looking for? Is there external guidance they can access on skills recruitment?
Yeah, I mean, some companies may well already have good external relationships with specialist recruitment consultants. And if they are good specialist recruitment consultants, they will have their fingers on the pulse of what's going on with the market in general.
Because, I mean, it is very difficult to follow these pivots and twists and turns in the Brexit negotiations. So I suppose somebody that is their job to look at what's going on in the in that field is going to have the latest information.
Yeah, I mean, that raises an interesting point, which is, you know, where does the responsibility for recruitment lie? And that can vary tremendously from company to company. It can be an HR function, but actually recruitment is a kind of quasi-HR marketing communications sales, new business function, actually. And I think the thing that you need to do is get somebody to have a look at where your company is now. You know, do a swap test on talent for your business right now.
That's great advice.
Look at your current employees and look at, you know, what percentage of them are EU nationals. Look at what you're doing to make them feel secure. You know, are you communicating to those people that they do have a future in your business, that they're valued? Nobody knows exactly what's going to happen, but, you know, I think it helps if companies are open and you know, have that open door policy, that if you've got somebody who's working for your business now that is an EU national, that they have the ability to come and voice any concerns that they may have to you. But look at where your talent pipeline is and where you're going to build it. You know, do you have links with, you know, universities? One of the reasons that Brighton is such a successful digital hub is that we have both, you know, Brighton University and Sussex University, and the digital community here has good links with those universities. So who is going to be responsible for not just the recruitment strategy within your business, but rolling out that strategy? And again, I think a lot of digital businesses have a very tactical approach to recruitment. Mm. You know, they can be like running quite lean organisations, be quite client-driven. We've just won a massive new piece of business. Hurrah, let's staff up with loads of people. But if you've got to start right from scratch every time you want to recruit, then you're going to be behind the curve. So have you got have you got an applicant tracking system in your company? So if somebody applies for a job now, will another hiring manager within your business in 3 months' time quickly and easily be able to access their information?
Good question.
Or will it just have disappeared into the kind of recruitment ether?
and recruitment clearly needs to rise up the agenda for any business in this climate.
Yeah, it is. Yeah, I mean, the talent shortage is well documented in digital. You know, people, companies need to be as smart about finding their talent and keeping their talent as they are about finding their clients and keeping their clients. And they need to apply as much boardroom meeting hours and strategic thinking and employ people to do that, you know, whether it be using somebody like me to come in, either as an internal recruitment manager or talent manager, either for a period of time or to have one permanently, whether your HR department actually has the capacity and the skills to be able to take into that function adequately and so you don't need to.
Yeah.
Are you going to brief out to recruitment agencies? Are you going to advertise? Are you running events? Are you you running, going to meetups in Brighton? What's your profile
like?
There's
plenty of options of ways to access the information you need. And Simon, just to sum up, where would you say people can get extra help and advice about who should they be talking to get external input into what they're doing?
Well, I think they should definitely go and talk to their bank manager because that's a source of information for you. The bank manager will know a lot of people. The sort of introductions they should be looking for, there'll be a local Chamber of Commerce who will have connections.
Absolutely.
There'll be the British Chamber of Commerce who they'll feed into, and Department of Trade and organisations like that. And there is quite a lot of support and advice available if you know where to go. Mm-hmm. So that would be a good starting point. The talent bit is quite interesting. I listen to that with interest because if you're a UK business and you don't export, for example, you might listen to this radio show and go, I might start selling my mugs abroad. But there's a skills shortage for international trade. So you have to think about the people you've got working for you and how do you address that. And that's not easy, but it can be done.
Yes.
So there are all sorts of sources of information and support available. But definitely start talking to Chambers of Commerce and ask them the questions.
Super. That's excellent advice from Claire Griffin and Simon Nicholson. Claire from Claire Griffin Talent and Simon from Handelsbanken in Hove, our Brexit experts for the day. We'll be keeping a close eye on the Brexit arena here at the Business Show, and we'd like to hear your views. Tweet or Facebook us at Business Reverb or email natasha.steele@icloud.com.
Connect with us on social media and spread the word.
Shout out to your favourite shows
on Twitter at Radio Reverb, or join our Facebook group and message our community. Just search for Radio Reverb.
Spread the word.
My name's Natasha Steele, and this is the Brighton Business Show. You're listening on FM 97.2, on digital, online at radioreverb.com, and on podcast. Now it's time for Going Up, where two businesses pitch to you, our radio listeners.
Ground floor perfumery, stationery and leather goods, wigs and haberdashery, kitchenware and food. Third floor, telephones, gents, ready-made suits, shirts, socks, ties, hats, underwear and shoes.
In Going Up, we welcome two businesses onto the show. We give them a minute to tell us about what they do. It's based on the idea of an elevator pitch. Imagine unexpectedly finding yourself in a lift or elevator with a big hitter in the business world. You have just the length of the ride to share your idea. How can you cram all that brilliance into just 60 seconds? Well, we're about to find out. I'd like to welcome to the studio Kat Swift from OMG Tees. Hi, Kat.
Hi.
And Ben Sussex from Three Stack. Hello, Ben.
Hiya.
Now, I'm not going to tell listeners what it is you do, because you'll do a much better job than I will. But I am going to give each of you a minute to pitch your business. You'll find yourself in a lift, the doors will close, and you'll hear some terrible music. You have 60 seconds to tell us what you do, what's so good about it, and what you need to get to the next level. The lift ride ends with a bell. So first up is Kat Swift from OMG Tees. Are you ready to go, Kat?
Yeah. Did you know the majority of professional athletes are dependent on caffeine-laden energy drinks like Red Bull to give them a boost? Unfortunately, this boost is accompanied by side effects. Anxiety, the jitters, broken sleep because you're wired and tired at the same time, but most worryingly, dangerous forceful heart contractions. Enter the OMGT solution. OMGT is already a successful business being used by the England cricket team, but later this year we're going to be launching our ready-to-drink product, which will combine OMGT's matcha with purified water and natural sugar-free flavourings, giving the boost but without the side effects. No more jitters or anxiety, and certainly no more forceful heart contractions. Just an energised body and a clear mind. We already have a sustainable business, being stocked in Infinity Foods, Planet Organic, Hisby, As Nature Intended, Revital. Our launch partner for the drink is Nuffield Health Gyms. But this product takes us from a niche market into a mainstream market. So we're looking for investors who share our vision to jump on board whilst OMGT energises the world.
Well done. Brilliant pitch. And you kept within the time. We'll find out more about OMGTs after our second pitch. Second into the lift is Ben Sussex from Three Stack. Are you ready to tell us about your business, Ben?
Yeah.
Great stuff. Start as soon as the lift doors close and the music starts.
We are Three Stack, an American-style pancake company run by two young graduates who are in touch with the Brighton scene. We don't just cook pancakes, but we bring a whole new experience to the plate. We're fully functional for indoor and outdoor events, no matter how big or how small the event is. We hold tight to always serving a three stack of freshly cooked American-style juicy pancakes. You know what? Our love for people and exploring new places takes us away from the stereotype smelly old food vendor. We're so happy when our customers are happy. Our dream as Three Stack is to have multiple stores within Brighton and beyond, while sending out teams for various functions. No matter the size or type of event, we would absolutely love to hear from you.
Brilliant. Great pitch there, Ben, and well done you for keeping in the time. Two fascinating and very different foodie companies there. Now, Kat, I hadn't heard of Matcha Tea before. How did you come across it, and what are the origins of it?
I came across it about 8 years ago when my mum was diagnosed with breast cancer. I was working for Breakthrough Breast Cancer at the time, and we were fundraising for research into antioxidants. So I know there was an antioxidant in green tea called EGCG. They'd shown to fight lots of different types of cancer. So I wanted mum to drink the green tea with the most EGCG in it. And because of how matcha is cultivated and processed, it has 137 times the EGCG of regular green tea. Mm-hmm. So it's absolutely packed with this really potent antioxidant. So we started drinking it for that reason alone. And if somebody said to me 8 years ago, in 8 years you're going to be running a green tea company or a matcha company, you could have knocked me over with a feather. But yeah, the thing that makes matcha different is that first difference is 4 weeks before they harvest the tea, they cover the tea field with bamboo that locks out 90% of the sunlight. And to compensate for the lack of light, the plant produces a huge amount of chlorophyll, amino acids and antioxidants. Then when they actually pick the leaves, they freeze dry them and stone grind them into a powder. So rather than having the infusion from a tea bag or tea leaves, you consume the whole food. So it's, you know, known to regulate blood sugar levels, lower cholesterol, increase metabolism. It's packed with an amino acid called L-theanine that induces alpha brain waves. So it was actually introduced into Japanese culture 800 years ago by the Zen Buddhist monks when they discovered it helped them to meditate for longer. Mm-hmm. And that's because it generates the alpha brain waves, which are the brain waves that are present when you're very relaxed but very in the zone. So it's just an amazing food health product, and it actually, you know, as far as green tea is concerned, it's actually a really pleasant tea to drink as well.
That's the bit I'd need persuading on, because I'm a big fan of tea, but I'm a bit traditional in my tastes. But I think you're selling it to me if it's about taste as well as health benefits.
Well, I didn't like green tea, but because matcha is freeze dried, it doesn't. Tea oxidizes when it dries out, but because they freeze dry it, it doesn't oxidize. And when tea oxidizes, it gets the tannin, and the tannin is what it gives it its bitter taste. So it's a sweeter, sort of smoother, creamier drink than normal green tea.
Brilliant. And Ben, you've got a business partner, haven't you? Is that Russ?
Russell, yeah.
Yeah, so I believe the whole idea for Three Stacks started in Amsterdam, a lost weekend or a found weekend.
It was in Amsterdam only a year ago, 2016. We were at the time doing a volunteer year for our local church, Church of Christ the King. And we went out there to visit one that we had started. And we were in a cafe, not a coffee shop of that kind. And we chose pancakes on the menu. And it wasn't just the pancakes that kind of got us excited. It was the whole experience we had, the atmosphere, the welcome, aesthetically, the location, the whole package that we experienced, we really enjoyed. And we didn't believe that Brighton, in this city that we live in, when we came back to it, actually offered solely good pancakes, or where can we go for that? Because we wanted to have the same place that we did in Amsterdam. So we just kept talking about it and dreaming, as you do as two young graduates, thinking what's next for us. And we thought, you know what, let's go for it, let's try it. So we're very new startup, started in September. And we've done weddings this year, we've done festivals, we've done private functions, we've got a permanent residency, so still on the early doors, but it's exciting.
So we've heard about the health benefits of cat's teas. Is there such a thing as a healthy pancake?
There are healthy pancakes. Yes, there are. We would definitely push more towards a sweet option, as in a fill your belly and feel good. But we have a fresh and fruity would be our classic healthy pancake. We also do vegan options. We also do other various sweet and savoury as well. We've done pulled pork pancakes recently with smoked paprika batter. So we're still early to it and just trying out new recipes, but there's a lot to come from it and a lot to play with it. So yeah.
And both your companies have a really nice contemporary branding style, I think. Kat, would you tell us a bit more about how you came to think about the branding for your company and the name OMGT?
OMGT was hours really sat round the table with family and friends brainstorming, and it's actually really, really difficult to find a name nowadays. Everything is, it's taken with regards to URLs, it's patented, trademark, whatever. So actually trying to find something that fits. But I think, we really did hit on something quite, people compliment us on the name of the company all the time. I mean, matcha, because of, its L-theanine and caffeine, gives you a really fantastic physical boost. So it is like that OMG effect. So it just fits really, really well with the brand. So with regards to the actual brand itself, I've been going 3 years. The brand changed, the logo changed last year, with a little bit of resistance from me, actually, to be totally honest, because the initial logo I designed, and I was really quite married to it, and we did a piece of brand strategy, and what I wanted to do was actually reposition the different grades that we had and actually redesign the label. I wasn't really looking to change the logo, and the designer said, please can we look at your logo? And I was like, what's wrong with it? I actually really liked it. It was quite offended. Anyway, they went away and did what designers do and just came up. So our logo is actually created from the granite stone mill, and the granite stone mill is one of the things that makes matcha unique, because that's what's used to grind the matcha.
Excellent.
So
that's really nice. And how about you, Ben? Three Stack, how did that come? The look of it. Who's the brains behind the look of
it? The brains behind it is a combination between Russell and a good Francesca, who specialises in design. But then the name Three Stack, we're originally going to focus on coffee. We came back, we were actually going to be a coffee trailer at a local train station, and that was going to be Brew Brothers. But as Kat said, finding a name, actually when you're searching it online, so much is taken for the classic cafe names that you'd go for. So then we shifted our focus to pancakes, and we were just brainstorming ideas and giving shout outs, and we came up with the idea just Three Stack, a three stack of pancakes. We thought would be quite unique, and actually we didn't want to stick with that initially, but we have throughout all of our events we only serve a three stack of pancakes. So it's quite a unique selling point for us, and people like the idea of it when they see it. Wow, you actually get a three stack each time. So yeah, it's good fun.
So it's been absolutely brilliant to have you on the show, both of you. Can you just tell people how they can find you, what your website addresses are, or any other way they can contact you?
Yeah, our web address is www.omgtees.co.uk. And in Brighton, you can find us in Infinity Foods, Hisby, and we're served in Flowerpot Bakery, V&H Cafe, and other cafes around town.
Lovely. And Ben, where are you pitching up the pancake?
We've got a permanent residency at the Square Cafe on New England Street. We're also going to be outside the new small batch store in Portslade from September onwards. So every Friday morning you can find us there.
Oh, super. That's my end of town. I'll be down there.
And you can also find our website on www.threestack.co.uk.
That's lovely. Thanks ever so much, Kat Swift from OMGTs and Ben Sussex from Three Stack. And best of luck with your future plans.
Thank you.
Thank you.
If you'd like to enter the Business Show Elevator to pitch your company, drop me a line and we'll try to get you on the show. Find us on Twitter or Facebook at Business Reverb, or email natasha.steele@icloud.com. When I was researching ideas for music for the Business Show, I came across a list of 50 tracks entrepreneurs listen to for inspiration. It's no secret that music can be a powerful motivator. It can help keep you going when the chips are down and drive you forward to success. So I thought, with Brighton being such a musical city, I'd invite our guests to share with listeners the music that motivates them. Earlier, I asked Claire from Claire Griffin Talent for her pick, and this is it. Sabrina Johnston with Peace in the Valley. And that track from Sabrina Johnson brings us to the end of my first broadcast on Radio Reverb. Thank you to my guests, Jax Golding, Kenny Moyston, Simon Nicholson, Claire Griffin, Kat Swift and Ben Sussex. Thanks also to Anthony and Kelly in the Reverb studio. You've been listening to the Brighton Business Show with Natasha Steele. Catch us again on the third Sunday of every month. The show's theme tune is Busy Earning by Jungle.
The Brighton Business Show on Radio Reverb.